When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Talk Streamers podcast. My name is Simon. Today I'm joined by Paul. Say hello, Paul.
Hey, Simon. How's it going?
Very well, mate. I'm Ross, joined by Adam. Say hello, Adam.
Hi, everybody. Hope you're all doing well.
I'd imagine they are, unless they are Manchester United fans. We're going to come straight to the opening game of the week, or the match week. Man United hosted a decent Everton side, and we're only able to keep a point from the Toffees. I'm going to come to you, Paul. Give us your thoughts on the match.
Just so many good things to like about this match and results. Yeah, to start with, not starting Ronaldo. Obviously, it looks stupid now, but I think it looks stupid all the time if you're like struggling to not keep his job, but keep everyone on side. And then, yeah, the match itself, I just thought Everton looked like the team who were well organized and knew what they were doing, whereas United looked like they were just hoping, as they usually do, though, and it usually works, just hoping for some brilliance from anyone, really. And yeah, I think they were lucky. Big deflection on the first goal, as we discussed. And yeah, they were lucky to go in 1-0 up. But yeah, I think overall it was kind of, I think a draw was kind of deserved by both teams. But yeah, it's just when you have Solskjaer versus Benitez, it's basically just like a clash of two different managers. Benitez is just so like tactically aware. And he kind of has to be, obviously, because he doesn't have the players.
Yeah.
But Solskjaer just seems to be not winging it, but like close to, because he's got such a good squad.
I think a lot of people would agree with you as well. I mean, they are two different caliber of managers. I mean, I wouldn't even put them anywhere near the same bracket. I wouldn't put Rafa Benitez anywhere near the same depth as Ole Solskjaer is. I don't know, his managerial CV just looks like so. It looks like he won a competition, really. It looks like he's in charge of Cardiff. He was in charge of Oda, and then he won some sort of grand competition. I like that. He has something terrible against the board that should be released upon him being sacked. I feel like the draw was the right result. I feel like Rafa got a lot of things right. I think, you know, Man United's whole sort of tactic of just relying on individual brilliance or moments of brilliance is not any sort of foundation for consistency, is it? You know, wondering where that next moment of quality is going to come from. And I don't understand why he's so insistent in being a counter-attacking side either. But they really only need sort of maybe one signing to move into a sort of like really dominant. I mean, it's all about possession these days, isn't it? If it's for league competitions, isn't it? You know, you can go counter attacking and win a tournament, you know, because that's very much suited to tournament football. But when it comes to the league, where it's week in, week out, I don't know if it's any sort of foundation to mount a true, you know, title challenge. I feel like it was a little bit naive to drop Ronaldo. I understand he's 36, but still, it's like this is an Everton that is, I think, fourth or third in the league when they played this match. So I don't understand why you'd be resting any players. to play that side, a side in form, you know? Adam, what were your thoughts?
I actually think from the system point of view and why United and Ollie is so insistent in playing this sort of counter-attacking style of football, I would actually put it out there that I think potentially he's scared. And what I mean by that is you saw when he first came into the club and they had the success after the 3 months where he was the caretaker and then it all went a bit downhill. He was trying to play a sort of more possession-based attacking style of football then. And he got hurt. I remember they lost quite a significant amount of games, and that was where I think the first sort of signs started emerging that he's definitely not the right coach. He's definitely not at the level of Manchester United. And it's sort of since then, he sort of developed this. And again, it's like Moments FC. It's very much we're going to sit and try and defend, soak up pressure, hit you on the counter, and then hope that one of our many attacking talents just does something and bails us out of jail. And that's very much been the tactic for a long time now. And I do think it is down to the fact that he's maybe scared to go back to that, because while he gets criticised a lot for how it's going at the minute, they're not necessarily losing an awful lot of games. Like, they're dropping points for sure, but they're not losing. And I think Solskjaer's in a position where he's been told if he gets top four, his job is safe. And I think regardless of how the season goes, Man United will get top four just because of the quality of the squad. I would maybe put across that it is potentially more of a he doesn't want to go back to how it was before. In terms of this game, though, I think a draw was a fair result. I thought Everton looked organised. They did well, actually. I thought at times they put on a bit of a press, which is unlike a Rafa Benitez team to sort of win the ball. I thought Decore did that especially well. Decore pretty much, I mean, Alan needs his fair credit, but I thought Decore especially pretty much dominated that midfield. I thought he was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I think for me it's this obsession with Solskjaer when it comes to Fred and McTominay. He seems to just, I don't know, like I think even Matic would be better in that position, maybe alongside a Pogba or Van de Beek. Like, what happened to that guy? I just, you know, it seems so bizarre to me that he keeps playing these two when they clearly don't work as a pair. And I mean, it went to show it again today. The other day when, you know, Decore is pretty much one man. I mean, again, like I said, Alan played well as well. But I think even with Decore just in that midfield, he just dominated them and he made it look so easy. And obviously, look, of course, let's not forget, Everton had the chance to go and win that game. If Tom Davies was just a little bit, maybe a confidence thing, I'm not sure why he played the pass to Yerry Mina.
He's in a great situation for himself. Scared of missing.
Potentially. It looked so obvious to me that he was offside. I don't know why he played the pass. But look, over the balance of the game, I think a draw was probably a fair result. I do just want to touch quickly on Luke Shaw as well, though, because this sort of links into a Ben Chilwell chat we'll have later with Chelsea. And I've noticed a lot of English players, I don't know if you guys have, a lot of English players since going back from the Euros have looked just really crap. Like, they've been really underwhelming. And I know they had the conversation on Sky. I think it was Henri and Carragher that was talking about it. And Henri was saying after coming back from an international tournament how sort of just mentally drained he was all the time. And I think Shaw sort of showed more signs of it today. I thought firstly he didn't look fit. And secondly, for the Everton goal, he was the guy that just got absolutely skinned by Decore. It was a brilliant sort of skip. And then for the chance with Tom Davies, I sort of forget his second name. Shaw was just nowhere to be seen down that side. I remember seeing the chance and I just couldn't even see Shaw in the frame. I don't think he looked fit enough. I thought he was very, very poor positioning, like I said. And it is going for a lot of English players at the minute. I don't know if it was something that you guys have picked up on.
It's definitely a well-made point. I mean, I think it depends how deep you go into the tournament, doesn't it? In terms of how it's going to affect you physically and mentally, and obviously going all the way to the final and not winning it is, you know, it's all the expended effort, all the expended sort of mental fatigue with none of the reward. So I think, you know, we're still early into the season. I think a couple of these players could have an upturn in form. Especially Luke Shaw, who's expected to play every single week in that Solskjaer side. Paul Andros Townsend, what a turnaround. What a turnaround. He's outspoken in the media about how he was very aware that no one expected him to succeed at Everton at all. But he's having a great old time, isn't he?
Yeah, he's having an unreal time. And I think Palace fans always rated him, and I always thought he's a decent player. He came out with Spurs and did well, and then he was at Newcastle. Was Benitez his coach at Newcastle? Or it could have been before Benitez.
I think he was. I think him and Townsend have a previous relationship, or have been in touch through other sources as well.
It seems like a perfect Benitez signing. One that could go horribly wrong, but one that if it works well, Townsend is the sort of player he isn't like a big enough player to be like, fuck off Benitez, I'm not listening to you. Like, he kind of would need Benitez to help him and improve his game. And you can see we saw with Gerrard and Torres back in the day, how much he did for them. Mm-hmm. So if players are smart, and I said it about Gray as well, if you listen to Benitez and kind of forget that he's like a bit of a weirdo and doesn't really talk to you, if you kind of put that to the back of your mind and actually listen to his
what
points,
the man has to say,
then you can actually go pretty far. And it seems like Townsend and Gray have just kind of bought into whatever Benitez is saying and are kind of the two standout performers. Like, they didn't even have Calvert-Lewin, and it obviously made a difference. I think Rondon was the sitter at the start, but it didn't make that much of a difference in the end.
I mean, to get a point at Old Trafford, right, when you're missing Richarlison, who was a key player for this Everton side, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin is, a lot of people put as the, well, I think he was very much the linchpin under the Ancelotti era.
I
don't think there's any sort of, I don't think Rafa Benitez necessarily likes to play with just any sort of one player being super overly key to the whole system. He's very much a sort of like everybody works for the team type of coach. And he came out and slated James Rodriguez. He doesn't want to compete, Rafa says. He'd rather just get paid money and have an easy time in Qatar. And wouldn't we all?
Yeah, that's the guy who doesn't want to listen to Benitez. He's like, I'm just going to Qatar and taking the money.
I cannot deal with this man. So Demario Gray was in touch with Rafa Benitez before the move even happened, and when Rafa Benitez was maybe in between jobs or looking to move, there was always that sort of just communication. Rafa most likely just texted him saying, you have to apply this to your game, and Demario texts him back, it's 3 a.m. Why are you texting me saying I need to press more?
You can imagine it.
Yeah, but he's getting the band back together. Solomon Rondon, a player that was really, really good for Rafa at Newcastle, who was the Mitrovic sort of one-for-one replacement when Mitrovic went off to Fulham. So going really, really well at Everton. It seems that the Everton fans seem to be buying into Rafa, and he's very much that kind of coach. He's a great coach. I really, really enjoyed him at Liverpool, and it was good to have him sort of back in the league, because he's a good man. He's a good test. He's a good sort of testing strip for the other managers to show their quality. You know, when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer comes up against a Rafa Benitez, it's never going to really be an easy time. And it can kind of point out the flaws in the systems of other managers as well, Rafa, because he's quite good at exploiting the weaknesses of the opposition as well, isn't he? You know, pressing in areas where he might not normally do against another opposition. But we have to move on, boys. Chelsea are back to the bridge, and they get a 3 points. I think two games without a win. Now they get their 3 points against Southampton. A red card for James Ward-Prowse, which means his consecutive Premier League starts record goes out the window. We need to start it again. He got right up past the 100 point, which is disappointing for him. But Chelsea, again, another win in the league. Still right up there near the top. At the top of the league, should I say. Southampton, struggling though. I think a game without James Ward-Prowse is pretty much a write-off for Southampton at this point. What are your thoughts, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just completely nailed it on the head. The game was comfortable for Chelsea, just another really comfortable win. Obviously, the one sort of shaky moment really was the Chilwell tackle, which was just really sloppy, I thought. and I mean, I've seen a lot of people blaming it on the fact that it was raining and it was a slippy surface. So I guess maybe that plays into it a little bit. But I thought it was just a really lazy tackle that he didn't need to make, which obviously gave Southampton a goal from the penalty spot. Apart from that, I think Chelsea were pretty much flawless, just controlled the game really, really well. Another completely dominating performance from Chelsea. As you said, though, I think you're going to be really worrying if you're a Southampton fan now. I think they were in serious danger beforehand, despite, to be fair, getting 2 points against both Manchester clubs, which was really good. Unlucky not to beat City as well, actually. But
yeah,
I think they're one of the more favourable shouts for the relegation this season. I think they'll definitely be in the fight. But now, again, without James Ward-Prowse, as you said, you can almost write the next game off for them. I'm not actually too sure who that is, but I don't see them winning it.
No, I don't.
I'd be really worried for them.
Extremely key to this side. And it's all well and good getting a point against the big sides, but it's not necessarily what keeps you up. What keep you up is getting the 3 points where it matters against the teams that are around you, depriving the teams around you of points and putting points on the board yourself, which I just feel like Southampton maybe aren't going to do this season as much as they could. I mean, I know they've kind of surprised me. I thought they would really, really struggle, to get any points on the board because I just felt they were picked apart. I'm surprised Ralph, I think he's just one of the guys that just loves living in misery, just loves relishing a challenge when he's back up against the wall. I don't know how he's putting up with his side being consistently picked apart. How can he ever expect to gain any sort of momentum if every time he gets any player of real quality, they're plucked away from him? Almost immediately. I think if James Ward-Prowse exited, that might have been him out the door. You know, there's only so much a manager can take. And, you know, I'm not massively... I mean, Southampton have been in the Premier League for a good few seasons now, and you'd probably expect, you know, more investment. It's not as if they're selling players, but they don't need to... I don't feel like they need to sell these players for these prices. I don't feel like you need to go and sell Danny Ings for 30 million, you know? Or whatever it was. I think it was about 30 million, but... I don't know if that's a massively ambitious club, which I'm sure is a disappointment for the fans at St Mary's. We next move to Wolves, Newcastle. Bruno Lage puts another 3 points on the board, which he'll be very happy with, because he has played some extraordinary football at Wolves. He just seems to not have been able to put the ball in the back of the net, but entered Newcastle to rectify that relatively quickly. Paul, come back to you. Another loss for the Newcastle bunch, and the Magpies are still pretty angry that Bruce is at the helm.
Yeah, I think this was a big one for Newcastle fans. I'd say they kind of looked at this as maybe a draw or a win, like Wolves haven't really got started. But yeah, the two goals by Hwang were just, I love them. I thought they were unbelievable. Just little side foot finishes into the corner. I don't know if you saw them. I was especially happy with them because I think Billy put it in the group a few months ago laughing that they had signed this fella who he'd never watched play. So more than happy that he got two goals. But yeah, Wolves are just, I always want them to do well. I don't know why. So yeah, hopefully this will be like the start of a run of form where they can kind of, I think Europe is probably out of reach since they started so poorly, but, and with Jimenez and stuff not hitting form yet, but yeah, I'd like them to be mid-table and comfortable so that they can, I don't know, grow the squad again for next season. Because obviously this season was always going to be one in transition. So yeah, it was a good win. But yeah, beating Newcastle, I guess everyone expects to beat them. Like Newcastle are in huge trouble. Like you talk about Southampton, but the thing about Southampton is you could see them like buying their way out of trouble or trying to buy their way out of trouble in transfer window. But you just don't know what Newcastle will do.
I rate Southampton's manager a little bit better than Steve Bruce as well. I think Hill does play some decent football on his day, and I think he's getting a lot out of these players. That maybe, even though they're not doing particularly well, I think maybe some of these players are performing a little bit above their ability necessarily, but you'd never ever think that looking at a Bruce side. You think the opposite looking at a Bruce side. I think when you look at these players in the pitch and you think, how are these players nowhere near it? I mean, you know, you see moments of brilliance from like a St. Maximin or a Miguel Almiron. Young Joe Willock, I think they're extremely fortunate to get. Just for the boy was desperate to get minutes, I think he would have went really anywhere if he was guaranteed playing time. And, you know, I've got a lot of respect for players that are like that, and they really don't want to see any sort of stagnation in your career. And the type of player he is, I think Arsenal could probably do with a player like that. I think he could probably fit that system. So he's maybe missed a trick there. But, you know, there's a lot of decent players in this Newcastle side. I think they're a bit shy at the back. I think they're probably in the bottom sort of four, or between four and six of you know, back lines in the league. I think they're definitely on that lower end. But, yeah, I mean, as long as they're in the Premier League, Mike Ashley will keep Bruce at the helm. He'll keep any sort of yes man. It's not going to really question him too much, because every time Bruce has even had a hint of coming out in the media and talking about how ambitious this club is, the board have just, you know, disregarded him completely. they know very much that he is at their mercy. He's not a manager that's going to go away and get employed by another Premier League club next week, unless Watford suddenly slash another manager. I want to come next briefly to the Burnley Norwich City fixture. I'm going to come back to you, Adam. I mean, I say this every weekend probably. This is a game that nobody asked for.
I've literally got in my notes that as the first line under this game, this is the game no one wants to talk about.
Put the listeners out though. This was very much no. I mean, which is, you know, if these two sides are going to play each other, you at least expect that maybe one of them goes and has a bit of a, you know, an off day and go and score a few goals.
Well, McNeil missed it was a sitter that McNeil missed though, wasn't it? Dwight McNeil. I thought he's actually played really well this season, to be fair. I think I spoke about it a couple of times, I think especially after the Liverpool game, where Burnley they're still Burnley, but at times they have played a little bit more freely, and especially in the game, like I said, against Liverpool, they weren't really frightened to press from the front at times and try and win the ball up high. I think Dwight McNeil's been a really, really big part to that. And I think he's actually had a really good season. So disappointing for him not to finish that chance that he wasted. But yeah, as I said before, I think it had 0-0 written all over it. This one just wasn't a very interesting watch at all.
I mean, when you look at the board and you think Norwich are pretty fortunate to get this point at Burnley. For me, they're down. I understand it's the beginning of October. Norwich are down for me, 100%. I mean, I feel very bad for their fan base that they have to operate and with owners that are very much happy to be in a top 26 club, and come out and speak about that publicly as well is a bit disappointing. You'd expect your team to have some sort of ambition of, you know, maybe going on and becoming some sort of force in the league and maybe doing you know, a Wolves, where you're almost an established Premier League side within a matter of years. You know, it wasn't too long ago that Wolves came up. Disappointing for their fans. But Burnley is just business as usual at Burnley, under Sean Dyche's reign, who I believe is he the longest reigning manager in the league?
He must be.
I think he might be.
He must be.
I only mention that because the next game we come to is Leeds Watford. Watford sacked their manager, young Sisko, whatever his second name was. He wasn't there long enough for me to learn it. they've got Claudio Ranieri, who apparently rejected some offers from Italian clubs to come to Watford. Just likes the UK apparently. But Watford carry on the tradition of sacking managers as soon as anything looks remotely unpleasant, I suppose.
They weren't even doing that bad, though, I don't think.
No, they weren't. I don't think.
They're doing all right.
Yeah. What a weird old place it must be. The weird thing is, you watch a Ben Foster vlog, and everything looks rosy around the camp. But, you know, there's just like constant. It must be weird to just operate in your job role knowing there's like an axe floating above your head, and you don't know when it's going to drop because, you know, it could be because the board broke up on the wrong side of the bed or whatever. But yeah, it's very much. I mean, I wonder how long Claudio will last, because there was a time, I think, not the last time Fulham were up, but the time before where Claudio Ranieri had them sitting 17th. And they sacked him and ended up going down, but it kind of looked as if they were going to just manage to stay up. So it'll be interesting to see. I think the goal will be very much for them to stay up this season, which I think could be doable. I mean, I don't see any reason why. I think their squad is fairly okay. But I think we should obviously go on and talk about Leeds, who got a good 3 points. So this is where I say that as we go into these sort of colder months, I think this is where we could see
the first win of the season for them, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah. So they've got points on the board now, and it'll be interesting to see if Leeds can go on and really put the pressure on some sides. Paul, what are your opinions on that?
I think what you said, like they'll just be disappointed with how they started, but they've had a couple of injuries which has affected, and then like as you we were talking about earlier, the Euros and like Calvin Phillips and stuff just coming back, like all that, their pre-season's been a bit different. So yeah, I'd say like there's no danger of them going down. So I think, yeah, just they'll be just looking onwards and upwards, I guess, and see if they can kind of build on this. And yeah, I think with the Watford thing as well, just to go back to it, I think I always think Ranieri's a bit of a dodgy appointment, but at least the team hasn't like been taking a beating so far. Like their confidence should be where you'd expect, kind of not even that low. Mm-hmm. They started quite well. So the sacking's weird.
I thought the scoreline flattered them a little bit though against Leeds.
Yeah.
I thought Ben Foster had a really good game actually. Leeds were unlucky to maybe not get three goals. But yeah, I mean, in saying that, to be fair, I think Watford had that disallowed goal, didn't they? I thought that was actually a little bit harsh, to be fair, from the corner.
Seen that a few times this season.
Yeah, but yeah, I think Leeds were the far better team. I think Watford were maybe a bit fortunate not to take a bit of a drumming in this one.
But,
yeah, like you said, with changing manager, you might get that managerial boost.
New manager boost. They love it at Watford. They love it. Sometimes they get it, sometimes they don't. Either way, it'll be disappointing to see Claudio go before the season ends. And then probably Kike Sanchez Flores gets his probably third go, I'd say, sometime in February or March. So look forward to that, Watford fans. Let's go to the Amex, where Brighton hosted Arsenal. A 0-0 draw. Not necessarily a boring game. I thought it was a decent few chances in the game. But I think if you probably offered this to either side beforehand, they might have took the draw, might have took the point. I think Arsenal probably went out and I think they had some good moments, and I think it was good for them to not concede. If you would ask me what team would probably edge this match, I think maybe Brighton kind of edged it for me a little bit. I mean, I think the Shane Duffy header, he was hugely disappointing to miss because he has a lot of time to point at the target. And I think if he hits anywhere in the goal, he probably scores there. Fellow Irishman, Shane Duffy, Paul. what a romantic resurgence that is that nobody's seen coming. Surely bodes well for the Irish national team.
but your thought is, unfortunately,
it's I mean, I think when you look back to when Chris Hughton was sacked from Brighton, a lot of fans thought it was pretty harsh. I thought it was pretty harsh at the time, but if you'd have told them in a couple of years' time that a draw at Arsenal would be a relatively disappointing result for Brighton, I think they would have took it.
Yeah, of course.
For sure.
I think when the manager's been there for so long, the fans are always going to be upset. Like, but it was the same. I remember Southampton sacked Nigel Atkins and brought in Pochettino. And you just, it's the same with players. Like, you got to bring in the better player if he's available. And it's always a risk, obviously, with the manager. But Brighton, I think, had the better of this match. But I think, yeah, both teams would be happy with the draw. And Arsenal, especially, not conceding to, away. They'll be happy enough as well.
Absolutely. Change times for Arteta. Things seem to be going pretty swimmingly with that brand new back line of, Tomiyasu and Gabriel and Ben White and even Aaron Ramsdale is. I mean, we were all laughing at it, weren't we? I was laughing at it when they signed Aaron Ramsdale. I was thinking, what are they doing? This is not really what they massively need. They need, someone in midfield to back up, Partey and Xhaka. But, it seems to be a relatively decent sign. I'm seeing performances that are probably better at a level above than Leno was producing. So, maybe these Arsenal recruiting teams. But we've just been filling us the whole time. We actually know what they're doing. No, of course not, because I seen Nicolas Pepe on this pitch and he was shocking. Adam, do you have any thoughts on this match?
No, again, I mean, look, it's a good point for both teams, as you said before. Brighton were sitting quite happy before the game, well, before the weekend, sorry, at the top of the table. But I think most importantly for Arsenal, because we know how diverse their fan base is, I think it was important for them to understand that this was a good point. Obviously, off the back of blowing Tottenham away in the North London derby, we know how there's a certain part of Arsenal fans that love getting carried away. Mm-hmm. But I think it was important for them to know that this was a good point, because they were never gonna, you know, you beat Tottenham, you blow Tottenham away, you're not going to go and win every single game. And look, especially how Brighton are playing at the moment. I say it at the moment, I get like dragged into this. Brighton have played like this for the last 2 years.
Seem to be dropping.
The chances are just dropping now. And as we've spoken about before, Graham Potter has quickly become the flavour of the month. A lot of Tottenham fans saying that they want him and,
yeah,
and this and that, but yesterday he was last season he was laughed at. You know, they had the highest XG in the entire.
I felt like this was
entire
a
league.
A,
they were laughed
a
at.
Bit of a last season result for Brighton. I think they had 21 or 22 shots and only two of them on target. Yeah. I mean it's like in that Football Manager thing where they put shoot more often on and then the players just start shooting from ridiculous. Brighton do they are guilty of like turning into stormtroopers. Like for a wee while, where they're just kind of it's shooting all over the place, but it's not really to any real effect, is it? but you know, I think that the fact they have become a bit more clinical this season has turned them into this real set. I mean, I think a season in Europe would be huge for Brighton fans. I think they'd be greatly appreciated. I think they'll be considered that a massively successful season if they would enter either the Conference or the Europa, or even top four would be, I would still say, like a long old time away, but you know, you never know if they continue to just keep beating sides and not lose, and you know, come the end of the season, Man United take a bad run. You never know. Wouldn't rule it out, folks. Speaking of Tottenham, we go to Spurs Stadium where they hosted Billy Boy's beloved Villa, where they beat them 2-1. Give us your thoughts on the match, Adam.
I thought Tottenham looked all right, to be fair, obviously, especially a lot better from the Arsenal game. Son came in, looked better, looked more dangerous. I think he was probably had a bit of a quiet one against Arsenal. This was the first game where I actually thought Harry Kane looked pretty good. We've slated him obviously a lot for the start of the season, and look, I love slagging off Harry Kane. Don't like the guy. but I thought he did all right. He did miss a big chance. I think it was towards the end of the game where he was sort of bursting through from the left hand side of the box, and he definitely should have done better with it. But I thought overall he played pretty well. I was most impressed with Højbjerg though. Obviously he gets the goal, which by the way it was a beautiful finish. Into the bottom right hand corner, placed it with brilliant technique, if I do say so myself. For me, it was more the sort of that desire back from him. Tottenham brought in Højbjerg to be that sort of that guy in the middle of the park that sort of has that passion. He breaks up play. He's fighting for every ball. He's got that constant heart desire to win games of football. And last week he was heavily criticised for the game, sort of bypassing him. And I think there was a moment where and Ndombele, who's sort of quite, although he's technically very good, he seemed to be quite a lazy player. And there was a moment where even he was sort of overtaking Højbjerg to get back. And in this game, I thought Højbjerg just sort of dominated the midfield. He sort of kept Aston Villa at bay reasonably well for the whole game. Although the scoreline suggests it was more of a tight game than from sort of the face of it, I think Tottenham were actually very comfortable in this and maybe could have even won by an extra goal or two, to be honest.
I feel like this was quite an important game for Tottenham to win. I think if they lose this, then Nuno actually starts to have questions asked about him. But like you said, I mean, Højbjerg had to lay down a marker. I think he was one of the better players in the Jose Mourinho era at at Tottenham. I mean, he's very much that sort of shithouse midfielder that can do the dirty work, can put in a challenge, play the simple pass. He normally lacks in his final product. But you know, obviously putting him away will do him the world a good. Villa not having the start of the season they probably expected after spending all that dollar that they got from that greasy diver, as Billy would say. Paul, where do you see Villa going this season? What would be considered a successful season for Villa?
I think mid table and just to stay away from the relegation battle, really. They had won this match, they'd be ahead of Tottenham. But as it is, Tottenham won it and are ahead of them. But there's not many points in it in the middle. I actually been impressed with Villa. I thought they'd really struggle without Grealish. And I think they would have, the season before last, when they were trying to stay up, when they first came up. But, they've turned into just their own team, and he doesn't seem to be that big of a loss to them. They've adapted really well. And obviously their signings have helped them with that. So, yeah, I think at the start of the season, they would have just been a bit nervous, the fans, about how it was going to go. But it looks like they'll be comfortably mid-table at this rate.
I think so. I think with the money spent, they might have considered to be somewhere around that sort of Euro Conference League place. But I think we'll probably see the best of Villa near the latter stages of this season, where these new players have really had a chance to settle in. You know, we've yet to see the best of Leon Bailey, and every minute I've seen from Leon Bailey has been impressive. You know, Danny Ings.
I forgot to mention. He obviously missed that game against Tottenham. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really big miss. I've been impressed with him. I've watched him a couple of times in the Bundesliga. I think there's definitely more to come with him. He's young. He's got a lot of potential. But yeah, I think he was actually a really big miss yesterday.
Yeah, I think he's definitely. I think the player with the highest ceiling at Villa. It's probably Leon Bailey, a great signing for them, a marquee signing for them. I would really say that they are looking to progress in some way or another. But yeah, I think we'll see the best of Villa near the latter stages of the season, where these players really, really settle in, and hopefully we'll see runs in the team for the likes of your Buendias and your Danny Ings and Bailey all on the pitch at the same time, even Watkins to an extent. We next go to West Ham Brentford. Brentford upsetting the odds again. I think West Ham are on a terrific run. You know, they lose to Brentford, and Brentford just seem to turn up and ruin everybody's day, which is good for them. I'll come to you, Paul. This Brentford side, not too bad, not too shabby.
No, not too shabby at all. I think they met West Ham at a good time, as in straight after their game on Thursday. I think that's always a good time to play these teams, like the teams you didn't expect to be in Europe and then suddenly are with pretty much the same squad. But yeah, Brentford, they'll give anyone a game this season. Like they're not this squad or club that have just kind of found themselves in the Premier League. They've been planning for it for years. And they're finally there, and they just look like they're all born to play at this level, and they all know what they're doing, and they're not overawed by the occasion at all. To be drawn back to 1-1 at the 80th minute, that Bowen finish actually was unreal. I thought it was a great strike. And then to, nick it in the end, that's 2 weeks in a row where they've shown bottle to come back, especially against Liverpool. But West Ham, are no pushovers at the moment at all. So,
Really, really good side these days. Really, really good side.
Great result.
The thing about Brentford, I can't recall a team that's really got away from Brentford. I mean, every game, even when they've not got the result, they've kept it really tight, you know?
Yeah.
Which I think speaks volumes to just how the preparation been done at Brentford. And I'd like to see sort of this next season and the season beyond that, where things get tough and players are linked heavily with moves. Players are wanting Premier League money. Sometimes you go through a rough patch in the Premier League and it's hard to get out of it. These are the sort of things that they'll be up against. But right now, they're in that lovely stadium, enjoying these massive crowds, these massive away days as well. So, you know, I'm hoping all the fans have really enjoyed it, because this is a huge season for them. I think their first season in the top flight. So very much well received into the Premier League. And I predict that Ivan Toney is going to be going to the World Cup, because he is a tremendous footballer. What are your thoughts on it, Adam?
Oh, he's brilliant, isn't he? He's absolutely brilliant. I think he makes it even better, just, again, from a Liverpool point of view that he is a boyhood Liverpool fan. You mentioned some of the difficulties may come where they get players being linked away. I do really like Brentford. I think they'll stay in the Premier League for many years to come with the setup that they've got. But I do hope Liverpool sign Ivan Toney. I think, as you mentioned, with the preparation that Brentford have done, we've gone into it. I think I've mentioned it before on Screamers. They were, I think, around the similar time to Liverpool, actually. They were the ones that were introducing these types of throwing coaches and getting people in from NASA to really study the tactics and just how to get every single advantage from any game that they play and get the most possible out of every single game. And I think we've seen it's working wonders. You said that even games where things haven't gone their way, they've kept it tight. I think it's only a 1-0 loss to Brighton. I think that's their only loss of the season. Correct me if I'm wrong. They've just been breathtaking to watch every single time. And the manager, Thomas Frank, he's magnificent. Absolutely, a master tactician. Feels really ridiculous saying that about a Brentford manager, but he really, really is.
He really has. He gets a lot of stuff right. He gets his substitutions really bang on as well.
Well, yeah. Again, it was Wemu who scored the first goal. It was how do you pronounce it? Wissa. The substitute came on and was the one to bag the last minute winner as well for them. And you know, so again, it's another bang on substitution from Thomas Frank. I think Brentford are going to be a real handful for a lot of teams, and will realise, I think, fairly quickly that they're here to stay.
Speaking of managers that are here to stay, Patrick Vieira, what a start to the season. What character to come back from 2-0 down against Leicester. Generally a team that's not particularly easy to come back because they're very good at setting ourselves into a counter-attacking, and when teams come out to play against them, they generally have a wee bit of joy against. But it doesn't seem to be going Leicester's way this season. I think there's a few things going on in the club, but I want to speak to how good Palace were in this match in the second half in particular. I think they're a wee bit unfortunate to concede those in the first half as well. But Patrick Vieira got his subs absolutely bang on. Both substitutes getting a goal. Christian Benteke, the third substitute, came very close as well, but obviously it's Benteke. It's not going to go that well for him. I mean, they seem to be on the up. Paul, this new Palace side, what a side, eh?
Yeah, and yeah, like you said, they were pretty dominant. Definitely before the two goals went in. Like, it was a defensive error, obviously, for the first one. So yeah, that could have easily knocked them. And knock their confidence. And I think last season it would have been game over, but Vieira's brought something different to the team. And you can kind of see it. You can see it in the way they play. And yeah, I think Leicester aren't exactly the team they were last season where they could have closed this out. But yeah, Palace really came back at it and easily deserved the draw, if not on the whole performance to win. Not really sure what the story is with Leicester. I was watching them during the week and they were 1-0 down against Legia Warsaw. And for the second half, just didn't do anything, nothing at all. They were playing a slightly different team and rested a few players, but yeah, I don't know. It seems a weird one at the moment. They're definitely lacking confidence now after a few dodgy results.
I mean, you'd expect a Premier League side to do any sort of put any sort of Polish side to the sort.
Yeah.
A few difficulties there. Not going Brendan Rodgers' way at the minute. The speaking of the individual errors in this match, I think young Joachim Andersen, or I think that's how you say his first name. Billy is a huge admirer of him. Unfortunate for young defender, but he did a wee bit of justice. He was the one that sprayed the ball out to the left for the I believe the first or second Palace goal to come. I think he's just very much getting to the pace of the Premier League, because I think he was a little bit at fault for the second goal as well. Not completely, but could have probably done a little bit better. But despite Leicester having a bad time, Jamie Vardy is having a great old time. I think he's top of the scoring. I think 6 goals he's got in the Premier League this season, Jamie Vardy. So not going too badly for him at all. How about you, Adam? Yeah, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I was just going to say, actually, with with Leicester, I think probably the most worrying thing for them is in recent years, they've relied very heavily on the fact that they start seasons really well and sort of maintain that up until like the business end of the season. You know, this is why I maintain the fact that Brendan Rodgers is just a bottle job. Maybe carrying some hurt from his Liverpool days, but he can just never seem to see a season out. And I think the fact that
except
he's
for
not
those
even...
3 times at Celtic, of course.
Yeah.
Well, I think we could win the league with Celtic.
I could win a league with Celtic. And very but, much but got yeah. out very quick when looked as if Rangers were going to have any sort of turnaround. He was like, "Oh, I'm out of here, yeah, Jamie."
Yeah, straight out of there. Gerrard puts a bit of pressure on him, and he's gone. But yeah, I think I'd be really worried if I was a Leicester City fan, especially with the teams above them that have strengthened. Obviously, the top four look a different class altogether, and the fact that they haven't got off to their great start that we sort of know them for, and I don't really see a way in which they compete for the top four. I think they'll still be there or thereabouts sixth, but it's a bad start for them. But I said it last week. I have to say it again. I have to apologise with Patrick Vieira. I was so wrong. I thought there was no way he'd be able to come and drastically change the style of this Crystal Palace team that we've all known to be so sort of resolute under Roy Hodgson. And he's came in. He's done it so quickly. Not only the style, but as Paul touched on earlier, the mentality. Palace were pretty dominant anyway, even at 2-0. But the way in which they went in at half time, came in, turned the game around. Unlucky not to win as well. Actually, you mentioned the Benteke chance. There was also a chance from Edouard that hit the crossbar.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Palace were really unlucky not to take all 3 points from this one. And again, massive credit has to go to Patrick Vieira, and considering the fact that he's not even got Eze back in this team, which is, you know, he was by far their most creative player last season. I'm really excited to see what Vieira can get him playing like.
Yeah, I think young Alessia looks a great talent. I think about $8.5 million they got him for kind of looks a bit like a steal right now when you kind of look at that sort of ready-made Premier League level sort of youngster. Yeah, so credit to Pat. I mean, the thing I like about him is how cool and calm he is. And I think he's asking his players for the simple things, you know. They spoke a lot. Zaha and I think Ayu did a joint interview together where they spoke about how they've not really enjoyed the double training sessions, but they are enjoying having a lot more attacking freedom on the pitch. Because I think it's very much if you're going to change from a Roy Hodgson style, you need to increase sort of fitness. I think it's been a difficult old training camp at Crystal Palace. But you're not going to not work hard when Patrick Vieira standing 5 foot away from you, scowling. I really, really rate him. It's so good to see him in the league. I think he's really, really well received from the neutrals. And yeah, long may it continue because the Crystal Palace play some really superb football this season. We next go to the Liverpool Man City, the thigh rubber. Some neutrals are calling it the game of the season so far. And a season where we've already seen some pretty tasty games. 2-2, you can listen to a more in-depth review of this match on our Total Liverpool podcast, which is a separate podcast based on all things Liverpool, hosted by myself, Adam, Jake and Deej, who you would have all heard on the Screamers before if you've been a listener for any sort of time. But I'm going to come straight to you, Paul. Give us your thoughts on the Man City Liverpool game.
It was unreal, wasn't it? It was just like a throwback or something nearly in the end to like those Arsenal United games back in like mid-2000s. It's just the quality. Like when the Salah goal was just incredible. And his Mane's goal was just outrageous as well. Like, and then the play, like City, I thought were by far the better team for, I don't know, 70 minutes, I guess. Like before the goals and then after the goal. But having said that, once City got back into it at 1-1, then they didn't look like getting the second, I didn't think. And then Liverpool got the second. And then, yeah, it was disappointing. Like, Liverpool's defence is just, obviously, it's just not where it should be at the moment. and they City exploited Milner. I think it was definitely Milner should have got closer to Foden. You could see what he's trying to do. He's trying to block the pass across goal, and it's obviously easy to say when he like hits it in the bottom corner that he should have done better. But yeah, they exploited Milner, and obviously Milner should have been sent off. It was just one of those games just that had everything. Like, it was just class to watch. And yeah, I wasn't too disappointed with the draw. Obviously you want to win, but like, I don't think Liverpool really deserved to win. Like, two moments of brilliance and they're fairly rubbish other than that, I thought. Like, they weren't at it in the first half at all. And then second half, they were a bit better, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think
thought a draw was fair enough.
I think Liverpool were incredibly fortunate going to halftime 0-0. Think Liverpool did really, really well to apply the pressure in certain areas of the second half. James Milner, incredibly fortunate to remain on the pitch. He obviously had a difficult time of defending against Phil Foden. Man City were very much in the vein of sending the ball out to Phil Foden, whatever way, even directly from Ederson at one point. It was a superb watch if you write off that sort of first half. I think this is sort of the fixture, isn't it? In that second half, you can blatantly see you're watching two of the best sides in world football. And it had that sort of look at the end of the game where, like, you know, Jurgen and Pep have been screaming all game. They kind of embrace each other. And all it's very much a mark of respect, I think. And it's one of my favourite fixtures of the season. Even though, like, as a Liverpool fan, I do want to see us take away the 3 points. I sort of always, even though these games, sometimes they can go... I mean, if you look at the time before we played City and lost dreadfully... you know, it's a great fixture to watch. Adam, give us your thoughts.
Just sort of echoing what Paul said, really. I thought City were probably the better team on the whole of the game, certainly in the first half. Liverpool just looked, in the first half, just looked flat. We spoke about it on Total Liverpool. We just couldn't get the ball out. I thought the actual defence overall did quite well, apart from James Milner, who was just exploited time and time again by a brilliant Phil Foden. It was one of those games, I think, especially the second half where the game itself picked up. I think it was very apparent these are the two best teams in the Premier League. We've spoken about Chelsea and to a less extent Manchester United. I still see these two teams as being just a cut above. I think they're both genuinely on their own level still, even with the investment of the other two clubs. I thought it was a brilliant game to watch from a neutral point of view. On one hand, I'm very sort of very happy with the draw from the sense that, like I said, City were probably the better team. Milner was lucky to stay on the pitch. But I just think on the flip side, when you think about how Liverpool took the lead twice and weren't able to hold it, the Fabinho chance that Rodri blocked, mm-hmm. It was an outrageous block from Rodri. Brilliant from him. You sort of saw it as almost being a certain goal. I think you referenced, Simo, that time felt like it just slowed down and the net looked so big.
The net goal. Got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then eventually, obviously, it didn't come off.
Obviously the second City goal as well, is you want Matip to be in that position to block the ball. As a defender, you want him to be there. But Alisson was saving the shot, you know. So it's so sort of heartbreaking to not win a game like that. But I think like we've discussed before, I think on the balance of the whole play, it was probably a fair result.
Yeah.
Just one extra thing to touch on. Mohamed Salah is the best player in world football right now. He is.
Absolutely.
And I won't hear otherwise. The goal justifies it. I don't think there's another player in the world capable of scoring that goal right now. I just don't think there is. Like, can Messi and Ronaldo still score a goal like that? I don't think so. The strength he showed to sort of shrug off Rodri gets away from he strengths off Cancelo, then shoves off the Foden who tries to push him in the back. ball rolls Bernardo Silva, puts him on his arse, spins Laporte inside out, and then to put it in on that angle with your right foot, that weakened foot, posting in with that finish, oh my God. It's the best goal I've ever seen him score. It was incredible.
I am a Liverpool fan,
so it may be biased. It may be, but he is the best goal I've ever seen him score. And he's truly on a planet of his own right now.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've heard it here. Thank you very much to Paul and Adam for joining me today. And thank you very much for our listeners who are tuning in every single week. We've only been releasing one episode a week for quite a long time now, probably about 4 or 5 weeks. And we're looking at bringing our schedule back up to what it used to be and maybe getting 2 or 3 episodes out a week. So look forward to that if you're still with us and you've made it all the way through our long podcast. But until next time, cheerio, bye.
Find more great shows or join the team at sport-social.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.